There's my girl. Noticed you handing out some shekels. How would one get on that train?
That was per diem for Philadelphia.
Ugh, that town smells like cheesesteaks.
That town is full of history.
Andrea is the office bitch. You'll get used to her.
Gotham Sports Network presents NYG Weekly.
NYG Weekly, Ethan Weiss here with you once again. Before we get into everything, you know what we got to do? We got to take care of the housekeeping. Follow us on Twitter. Follow me at EthanGSN. Follow Weiss at NYG Daily. Follow the blog at GothamSN. Subscribe. We're everywhere. iTunes, Audio Boom, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, Spotify. Subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe. Rate us 5 stars. Leave us a kind review. We have a special guest. My wedding week fill-in, Will from Twitter, at 27, T-W-E-N-T-E-E, and the number 7. Will, what's up?
Ethan Weiss, great to be here. How are you?
Well, we're okay. I really don't know what to expect from this episode because about an hour ago you were itching to get on the microphone because you were furious, and then 15 minutes later you were in a better mood. So it might be a bit of a wild card from you this episode. Give us a temperature check.
Yeah, I am a little bit of a wild card. I just came from a Hanukkah party in New York, so, you know, participated in Giving Tuesday, funded some good causes, but went to the game on Sunday, and as somebody who would say that the Philadelphia Eagles are my most hated franchise, had a good time watching a win and sadly felt very empty shortly afterward, and
me
I have
too.
A lot on my mind about that, and yep. I think that's why we're going to have to talk about today.
Yes.
Yeah, so I think that's fair. I think, not the first time that we've, you know, sort of discussed this where, you know, why this podcast is rarely heavily focused on the X's and O's and really focused on more organizational direction. And for good reason, obviously. Not to say that we never touch on the X's and O's, but there are other podcasts out there that do a better job of that than we do, admittedly. But I tend to agree with you. A very empty win because, again, like, it is hypocritical of me. I'll say that because year one of Joe Judge, when they weren't really off to a good start, my whole mantra was just win. I don't care. No more excuses. Just find a way to win. And it's sort of what they did yesterday, but you can't really, at least from my perspective, and listen, there are a lot of people on Twitter that I think are on the same page as the three of us in terms of how they felt after the win, empty being probably the best descriptor for it. You scored 13 points off of 4 turnovers. That's atrocious. And this comes the week after the Giants fire Jason Garrett after another abysmal 10-point performance in primetime against the Buccaneers, who have been getting their secondary. They're starting like their 6th and 7th stringers, by the way, and everyone just seems to be lighting them up, and they have to get into shootouts, except for the Giants, obviously.
Yeah, their secondary is
Kitchens.
I was going to say their secondary is like the 2017 Giants with Ross Cockrell and Andrew Adams.
We're off to a hot start, yeah. So again, new offensive coordinator, play caller, a little changed, right? You had guys like Kenny Golladay getting some more targets, which was good to see. But at the end of the day, it was the same old shit. And I never really understood why people expected differently or better production, because just because you change the play caller doesn't mean you have a brand new play sheet and a brand new playbook, and all of a sudden you're going to start trying this wacky shit or these deep plays and all this, because the roster limitations are the same. And my favorite mantra of the fish rotting from the head down as it pertains to describing the Giants organization, with John Mara being the head and being really just an incompetent dickhead, people just were under the impression that maybe something would change. But Jason Garrett prepares a game plan every week. And who approves that game plan? The head coach. The head coach is the CEO. Okay? Nothing goes on during that week. I mean, I'm sure there are some small things, you know, but if the head coach wants something drastically different, the head coach is going to mandate something drastically different. And for people to just think that just because Jason Garrett's gone, the guy who's running the show is going to change is asinine. So to me, you know, there are a lot of reasons to be down on the win. If you want to focus on draft position, focus on draft position. If you want to focus on the fact that Dan Jones looked average, maybe, again, okay, you could focus on that. If you want to focus on the play calling being bad, go ahead, focus on the play calling being bad. The fact of the matter is, yet again, Joe Judge has failed to prove to you, me, to people listening on Twitter that he is a capable head coach and that he deserves to stick around for another year. And on top of that, at least in my opinion, that is something that I believe to be a fact. There are still huge question marks around other pieces of the roster. Daniel Jones, which we'll talk about, especially now that he's injured and unlikely to play this week and potentially beyond. But yet again, we're left with disappointment and more questions than answers. And you know, this looks like there's some extracurriculars going on I won't comment on as Weiss starts to laugh. But that's going to be my opening rant. Weiss, you can go. You can give it to Will since he is the guest. I don't care, but I agree with you, Will. It feels like an empty victory.
It's very empty. And here it's empty. You brought up good points. It's empty because, like, I hate the Philadelphia Eagles. I hate them more than anything in the world. I hate their fans. And by the way,
I think that this is like a generational thing, yeah, because our generation, people our age, right? It's Deshaun Jackson, yeah, man. I mean, there's a lot of other stuff, but like that's the pinnacle of it. Like my dad, Cowboys, easily. Him and Will, I'm sure your dad's the same. Weiss, I'm sure you as well. It's the Cowboys for that.
I think the thing. By the way, Eagle fans were really pumping their chest out coming into this week. I mean, relax. Anyways, it's empty because, like, I came out of that game like, we beat the Eagles, right? We don't usually beat the Eagles, but we beat them, and I should be celebrating this, right? Like, I look at the standings, and we're right there, right? We're a game out. Like, we're it's not like our season is lost. I mean, it's still a chance, right? Regardless how you feel about it, they're there. Like, I look at it, I'm like, I should be happy about this, but I came out of that like, okay, like we won. Cool. Like there was no excitement. Like I came away thinking to myself, why am I not excited about this? Like, why am I not happy? And this goes back to my distrust in the owner. You can see, like, I can envision a scenario where it's like the owner finds four or five things that he points to as a reason why he feels like we just need to move around the chairs in the building. We don't need to burn the building down. And this is one of those reasons. Hey, we beat the Eagles. You know, we were in it till December. Or, you know, look at our division record. Maybe this is one of those wins in a overall, you know, division standing. And that's the reason why. I mean, I can't get excited for this team. I think, Ethan, you said a couple weeks ago, it's a lot of apathy toward the Giants. And that's exactly what it is. I mean, it's like, I don't care. Okay, you beat the Eagles. Great. You know, I thought the defense was impressive. But like you said, the offense.
Again.
Nothing really changed with the offense. But I did like the play calling. And even though they only scored 13 points, they actually looked competent. Like, I wasn't watching it and I'm like, what the hell are we doing? Like, I saw that, hey, they were trying to get the football to the guys that needed to get the football. It's just that, unfortunately, they weren't successful at it as much, but they tried. Nonetheless, it's an empty feeling, and it's going to be an empty feeling until the Giants show an effort to win football games and become a winner, or, you know, if they actually grow a pair and do what they need to be, what needs to be done. So.
Yeah, I mean, and Will, before you go, like, to put it even more simply, show a pulse on offense.
Yeah. Yeah.
Show me that every possession you're trying to score seven instead of trying to score three or trying to play for field position. It's that simple. It's an offensive league. Your defense can be incredible. Awesome. Good job. Patrick Graham, round of applause. You're not going to win many games scoring 10 points, 13 points. And Jalen Hurts fucking sucks. Like, this is not something, like, come on. Like, he's an incredible fantasy quarterback. That's it.
So, I agree with a lot of what Ethan said, especially the point that generationally, our generation hates Philadelphia more than our father's generation who hated Dallas.
I'm glad that you agree with like my least important point of that entire.
No, that's a very important point because that's going to last. Okay. That's going to last for decades. And you know, the Eagles fans are scumbags. Cowboys fans are the enemy, and there's a real distinction there. But I think
I like that.
You know, there's a lot that Ethan said that's very accurate about what the Giants didn't do that left something to be desired. And I'm not really disagreeing with any of that. But what bothers me the most is really a point that you two have made more than anybody else. If you compare the timeline right now between where the Eagles are as a franchise and where the Giants are as a franchise, it's a joke that we're playing a coin flip matchup with these guys. They have $60 million of dead cap. They responsibly generated three first-round picks going into next year. They have a vision. They don't have their franchise quarterback. They know that. Eagles fans, if I'm trying to talk smack to them, they're like, whatever, this is a rebuilding year. We're only going to have one rebuilding year, not seven. You know, it's a complete different metric of where we are as a franchise. They're trying to get things right. Our owner is trying to say we didn't get things more wrong than everybody else in the league. And as long as he's
Is ironic because that seems to be their philosophy on offense too.
That's completely accurate. But when you have halftime of this game being a retirement ceremony, when the owner is afraid to speak and address the fan base, and not only that, everybody paying attention expects that the owner is going to be afraid to speak and address the fan base, and he's not willing to do the simple things that's going to get the fans on his side. I mean, it's right now a difference of like, you know, looking at World War II versus the Iraq War. And in World War II, you have the entire country united and together and going in the same direction. Today, you have your enemy, but you still have people trying to prove who's right and who's wrong. And right now, at the end of the day, the 2021 season is not nearly as important as John Mayer deciding we need to do what's right. And he's not there yet for whatever reason. He's still not there. And that's what's driving me crazy.
And that's why you can't get excited when you beat a division rival in a season that's technically it's not lost. It's not lost. So like you can have like if you're somebody that's like, I want to make the playoffs. It's right there for the Giants. But you just can't get excited because the direction of this franchise. And you brought up a good point, Will, about where the Eagles are versus where the Giants are. Eagles are telling you we're rebuilding. Every decision that they've made coming into the season is about them rebuilding their roster. The Giants, meanwhile, are trying to find a reason to tell you we're fine. Like, we're good, you know? Even though every single thing that you look at about this team shows you that you're not on the right track, you don't have a plan, and whatever you're trying to do isn't and hasn't worked.
The Eagles came into 2021 and said, how can we make as much money as possible for future years? The Giants went into 2021 saying, how can we create more money for 2021, forget what happens to future years, so that we don't look like an embarrassment?
And they still look like an embarrassment.
Yeah.
Everybody's nodding.
Yes.
Everyone is nodding. Yeah. It sucks. I mean...
And what it comes down to is, you know, Gettleman came in and he said, you know, part of a GM's responsibility is to make an environment where coaches can coach and players can play. Well, not only did he epically fail in that respect... But he's created an environment where the most passionate and most dedicated Giants fans can't feel like they can just invest themselves rooting for week-to-week wins because there are foundational problems that ring so much deeper.
You repeat that quote one more time. What did Dave Gettleman say?
He said, part of a general manager's responsibility is to create an environment where players can play and coaches can coach. And he used this argument, for example, when he was talking about why he didn't want to franchise give Landon Collins a franchise tag. He said, you know, if Landon's playing on the franchise tag and he's not happy, we're going to have the negotiations, and that's going to be holding over the locker room. So what does he do instead? He gives up draft picks to get somebody else, and we can talk about that somebody else, you know, until our ears fall off. Who has no connection to the New York Giants. He has him on a franchise tag, and he basically puts the Giants in a corner where they have to extend him, and now they've overpaid him. And again, they're spending 2022 and 2023 money to fit this guy on the roster for 2021.
But I'm glad that you brought up that point, that you got to build an environment to have players play and coaches coach. How many coaches in the last 3 years have publicly criticized the roster? Two of them. The head coach,
Pat Shurmur and Jason Garrett.
And Jason Garrett did it on his way out. Who knows what is said behind closed doors? If these guys are publicly saying this stuff, who knows what's being... I have never seen a coach publicly criticize a specific unit the way Jason Garrett criticized the Giants offensive line like that.
And Weiss, so you're talking about Pat Shurmur criticizing the roster. And I think what you're talking about is in week 17 when he kind of knew he was on his way out. He said, well, we had a really young roster, and he was talking about that. Go back to the 2018 offseason before the season even started. Dave Gettleman was saying, who wants to lose? I don't. It's about winning now. Pat Shurmur was saying – and Dave Gettleman was saying, Pat Shurmur, I trust you. Pat Shurmur was saying, we're going to go as far as the offensive line takes us. He was essentially criticizing the roster and setting a reasonable expectation before he started taking the pills and, you know, in my opinion, playing with the roster that he never really had a chance with. But this has been a situation where we've known coaches were going to have to be sacrificed before they've even taken the field. And I think that's happened with our last two head coaches.
Yeah, that's a good point. And it has happened.
And
so,
and regardless what you say about Jason Garrett, what he said about the offensive line is spot on. They only have one piece.
I mean, yes.
They really only have one piece.
You guys make the point as well as anybody. You know, Gettleman was talking in about how the offensive line was going to be okay coming in the year. He's like, oh, no, we're young. We've got Matt Peart. Where is he?
Yeah. Well, we were talking earlier, Will, about the quote from our now good friends, Larry Tynes podcast with current not friend Paul Schwartz, where Tynes gave some insight into the Peart situation. I don't want to totally detract from, you know, our organizational discussion, but I think it should be talked about.
So I listened to the podcast.
So you can correct me if I am misquoting, but essentially the two reasons that Larry Tynes gave for why Matt Peart is not a regular starter on the field is reason one being that he is just not good at practice. He's had his mental lapses. He's missing assignments. He's just not practicing well enough to warrant him starting. I find that could be true, but I still find it hard to believe that any mental lapse that he has could be worse than what we're seeing from Nate Solder. Number two was that they consider him a swing tackle. And I thought that, and I felt this, I don't know, portion of the podcast call it. And he says that he heard this from people inside the building. So he's claiming that it's from some sort of source, is that despite these mental lapses and the alleged poor practices from Matt Peart, that they still value him, but they value him as a swing tackle, and they're afraid to start him at right tackle because if Andrew Thomas were to go down with an injury, they don't want Nate Solder to have to come in at left tackle, which that argument doesn't make any sense to me, because if you value him as a swing tackle, if Andrew Thomas were to get injured, why not you just put Matt Peart back at left tackle, and then Nate Solder is still in the position that he's currently playing.
And then if somebody's injured,
he's playing, and now all of a sudden he's still injured, at risk to get injured. It's not like he's on the shelf.
Exactly.
And this is from an organization that started a defensive captain as a punt returner. I mean, there's a There's a lot that's questionable, but I can confirm with you from listening to the podcast that that is exactly what Lawrence said. And I think Lawrence's podcast, by the way.
Do you agree that it doesn't make sense?
Oh, I completely agree that it doesn't make sense. And okay. You had Carl Banks, who was in Lawrence's mentions, saying this doesn't make sense. It's like saying our kicker's really good at making field goals, but we're worried he's going to get hurt, so we're going to have our punter take our field goal attempts. It's nonsense. It's absolute nonsense. And talking about
that,
you know, who this is coming
perfectly,
from.
What you guys just said perfectly sums up the Giants organization. Like you said, that doesn't make sense about four different times. I mean, like it is amazing how
the Giants are using logic that doesn't work and hoping to react to a result that somehow validates a bad process. And that's and that's where I think I want to steer this conversation, because
one last point on Pert. It's just we've until we're blue in the face, Weiss, we've talked about this. Like the fact that they just went into the season and said, we like the young guys on the roster, trust us. It seemed like they were just going to hand Pert the starting job. So what is it? Will, go ahead.
It's a lot. And the other piece of this, frankly, that is worth discussing that was mentioned on the Sunday night broadcast when they were talking about Kevin Zeitler's proficiency this year, is you had two offensive linemen who basically had dummy years going into this year. You had Nate Solder and Kevin Zeitler. Kevin Zeitler said, okay, you guys can't pay me what I'm worth. You're going to obviously want to cut me. I'm not going to want to take a pay cut to stay here. So I'm going to go somewhere else because I'm still like a good player and I can play somewhere else. And now I'm doing that. Nate Solder had the situation, and in my opinion, what happened is he said, I can't play anybody else. Maybe I still owe you guys something. Maybe I still have something left to prove. And the Giants basically were stuck with Nate Solder being the only person who is willing to be here. And then if they decided they're not ready for Pert, Solder's the one who they're stuck playing with. And it's just ugly. I mean, if it's not, you know, if Pert's not ready and Solder, who looks like the worst tackle, is playing over him, that's terrible. If there's something else going on for whatever reason, if Pert is ready and the Giants, for whatever reason, are outthinking themselves and not letting him play, that's arguably even worse. So whatever's going on right now is not the signs of a sound, logical franchise, and it's heartbreaking.
That's where the hopelessness comes in. It's like, anybody that understands football can look at the Giants and say, like, this is not how a functional organization operates. But then you hear stuff like what the owner will come out and say, well, you know, we got to double down on this, or we have really smart people in the organization that we can't lose. And it's like, wait, what are you even doing? Like, what, like, how is this? I refuse to believe that this is just a one-man show, right? And you guys both agree with me. Like, I won't celebrate if it's just Dave Gettleman fired, even if it's an outside hire. I can't get on board with this. This needs to be a total house cleaning, because it's not just the fact that this is the first time the front office and the head coaching staff is on the same page. This is a reoccurring thing. Every single time we hear about stuff like this, whether it's a player drafted that's not playing and we're like, why is this guy not playing? Well, the coaching staff is not high on him. Well, wait a second. Why was he even drafted then if he can't even get on the field? Like, Matt Pert, he's a swing tackle, okay? Awesome. Why isn't he the starting right tackle? You basically handed him the job coming into the season. Well, we don't like the way he practices. Well, it's like, wait a second. Then why did you guys come into the year just handing him the job? Where there's that level of disconnect between what the coaches feel about a player and what the front office feels about a player, and that's why they're so dysfunctional, is because nobody's on the right path, nobody's on the same timeline, and everyone's just looking out for themselves. And essentially is what's happening here, whether it's with the salary cap, whether it's about what they do in the draft, whether it's about who they hire or who they keep. It's always somebody's on a different path than another person. Everyone's just doing something that benefits themselves and
there's
not
no collaboration.
None whatsoever. And they can say that there's collaboration till their faces turn blue. But every single year we see stuff like this. And whether it's a coach publicly criticizing, whether it's stuff that gets leaked out, like what we just heard about Matt Pert. It's every single year we hear stuff like this, and we're like, what the fuck is this?
I mean, yep. Eli Apple, you know, is a very similar example.
It's mind-boggling. I can't wrap my head around how a team operates this way. And you talk about...
And I just want to point to another example of just a very visible dysfunction that really any casual fan can observe. You have the Manning brothers on Monday Night Football against the Buccaneers literally laughing, saying, "We don't understand what the hell this guy's trying to do." You have Baldy breaking down Jason Garrett's play call, where there are three of the five skill position players literally standing on
within
a circle.
2 feet of each other.
Yeah, on a circle. It makes no sense. And this is the game that they're playing after the bye week on a long week with Monday night with an offensive coordinator that everybody believes, okay, isn't the answer. So rather than saying, okay, we need to move on from him during the bye week, they say, well, maybe he'll show us that we were all wrong with this one game against the best team in the league, like on Monday night going into a short week. And then they fire him after the fact. It's reacting, and not being proactive. And we've had some preponderance of evidence in some of the questions that the Giants are reacting to. That certain number two overall pick for one. It shouldn't have to be this bad and this overwhelming to understand, wow, we screwed the pooch. We need to get this right, not necessarily validate what was wrong.
And one thing about Jason Garrett we brought up is they fire him, right? We know the way they fired him. We just talked about it, right? After coming out of a bye, you give him a chance against Tampa Bay, like somehow this is going to work.
And Lewis Riddick's like, okay, if he doesn't show up against this one week.
Well, I had heard – so after the Lewis Riddick thing, I reached out to one of my sauces, right? I don't have a lot. I have a few sauces. And they basically echoed that there was a lot of pressure in the building for the offense to really perform. And that's why after the podcast, I had said, hey, I don't think Jason Garrett's going to be back. Like, I think he's going to get fired. Now, there was a part of, like, I paused before I said it because I'm like, wait a second, it's a short week. Will they really actually do it after a short week? But I just said it, and then Ethan kept pressing me about it, and finally I was like, look, it's an informative guess. But nonetheless, they fire Jason Garrett, and then automatically you hear, well, Joe Judge wanted to fire him, or there were talks about firing him after the season. Well, it's like, well, if the coach wants to fire his offensive coordinator, like, what's stopping him? And then you talk about ownership getting involved. And once you have ownership involved and you have – like, this is what I'm talking about. Like, when everyone's not on the same page, there's no collaboration, the philosophies don't match, this is the type of shit that you get. And we see it with the Giants.
Yeah. Do we want to talk about
the only collaboration there really player? Is the only collaboration there really is real quick is between Patrick Graham and Joe Judge, and it's no surprise that the defense continues to overperform because there is some collaboration there. They share the same philosophies, whereas other parts of this organization is clearly not.
All right, well, let's talk about Saquon.
Who?
Your favorite player.
Yeah, your favorite mascot, Will. Another awful performance. I really don't know how to tee this up. Yet again, looking at Will's face. I can point to our good friends from Talking Giants, Bobby and Justin, who both did sort of an independent breakdown of Barkley both this past week as well as overall just this season.
Well, how about I kick it off with a little stat for everybody? We like stats, right?
Is this the Justin stat? I was trying to pull it up.
No, this is a Will stat. This is a Will stat that I you know, was like, you know what? Okay, and I just, you know, went to the play-by-play and calculated this stat.
Well, let me just real quick, because okay. I already shouted them out, just okay. for the sake like of that. Doing things in order.
By the way, so they threw together a phenomenal tailgate in Lot L17. So shout out Talking Giants for that.
Good on them. So Justin's a bit of a psychopath, and he went back and he tracked every single Barkley run this season. 24.6% of Barkley's carries have gone for either zero or negative yards this year. Only 18.6 of Devontae Booker's carries have gone for either zero or negative yards this year. That's awful. This is the guy that you spent second overall on. I can't see that. I can't see it, Will. Okay. Okay. Well, you can read your stat then.
No, I'm sorry. I don't want to get distracted by it. But Justin and I were talking after the game about calculating some of these stats. The stat that I wanted to share with everybody else, and I think it's just jaw dropping. And you know, it's a little bit of, you know, post hoc ergo prop drop after the fact because of the fact. But Saquon Barkley had 13 carries and 4 catches and on 5 targets. 18 plays where the ball went to Saquon Barkley. On those 18 plays, the Giants picked up one first down. That's 5.5% of the plays. The Giants ran 40 other plays that didn't go to Saquon Barkley on Sunday. 16 of those plays were first downs or touchdowns. That's 40%. 40% yep. Versus 5.5%. And by the way, for whatever it's worth, one of those 16 of 40 plays was Daniel Jones taking a knee at the end of the game. So, like, this is there is a impetus on the offense to, quote, get Saquon involved, to validate Saquon's greatness. And I believe very strongly it's like Kobe at the end of his career. It's basically taking bad shots as an NBA team. And Saquon being on the field and continuing to eat these plays that a average running back wouldn't necessarily tempt coaches to call is a net negative. And I think the win-loss record shows it beyond a reasonable doubt at this point.
Yeah, and Bobby also put up video of all 13 of his carries, and there were some awful, awful plays. Like, what I think people don't understand in the criticism of Barkley, in at least this season, is we understand the offensive line is bad. The offensive line has been bad for like 10 years, okay? There have still been running backs like Wayne Gallman who have had more success than Barkley. Devontae Booker is having more success this season than Saquon Barkley. Alfred Morris, behind an awful offensive line, had more success than Saquon Barkley. We understand that the line is bad. We are not asking Saquon to hit a home run on every play, even though that is what he's trying to do. We prefer him not to do that. This offense is bad. We all agree on that. From the quarterback play to the offensive line play to some of the receiving options to the coordinator to the head coach. It's bad all around. If you have the opportunity to just hit a hole and pick up 3 yards, pick up 3.5, 4 yards, fall forward, get that disgusting chunk yardage that average running backs in the league, that undrafted guys are able to get. Like, Saquon is just missing the holes. Go watch the video that Bobby posted. There are some where he's bang. He's hit like 2 seconds into the backfield. He had no chance. There were a number of plays that had holes wide open where he could have easily, if he had just hit him and hit him hard, that he would have picked up that gross chunk yardage that this offense needs so that they aren't constantly stuck in second and third and long. Because you know that they're just going to insist on running the ball on early downs instead of throwing the ball. And if they're going to do that, you got to help them out. Hit the hole hard, pick up the chunk yardage, and give your offense a chance to keep going down the field. We're not asking for you to pick up 8 or 9 yards. We know that this isn't the Cowboys offensive line from 3 years ago. We know that this isn't the Cleveland Browns offensive line now. We get it. It's not a good line. But when there are opportunities there, and there are, you have to seize them. And he is not doing that. And it's infuriating. And earlier this season, we were joking about how he's got ballet shoes. He's dancing around back there. And people like to chalk it up. Oh, he's rusty. He's coming back from injury. That should never have been the case. Even back then in September, he was a calendar year removed from ACL surgery, Athletes are recovered at that point. He's practicing. He's going full speed. If he wasn't healthy, then he shouldn't have, fully healthy, then he shouldn't have been playing. But you know what? He was, and he's healthy right now, and he's still doing the same shit. So if you're sick and tired of us talking about the Barkley narrative and the second overall pick from 2018, fine. I can understand why that might be nauseating for you to listen to over and over, even though it's correct. But now you have to live with the fact that he is not even living up to the standards of an average league running back. And it is sickening that the Giants spent second overall on a guy who can't even pick up 3 yards and hit a hole. It's awful.
I mean,
wait, yeah, I got a lot I want to say. So Weiss, you need to go before I start, you know, while you got a shot.
All I'm going to say is everything you said, everything that we've seen is the exact reason why in April of 2018, or leading up to April 2018, we kept saying, this is not the right decision. The Giants are in no place to use a number two pick on Saquon Barkley, as great of a prospect he was. Will, the floor is yours.
Yeah, I mean, there are so many conversations here. Should Saquon Barkley have ever been selected at number two overall? No.
No.
Does that decision from 3.5 years ago, from more than 3.5 years ago, still cast a looming shadow over the experience of watching the Giants beat the Eagles in November in 2021? Absolutely. Absolutely. You can imagine after the 132-yard play that Saquon had, which was, you know, obviously, what was it, 80% of his rushing production? You can imagine that owner's box high-fiving and being like, yeah, we showed them. And you see the counter-arguments against us that are, frankly, without fail, illiterate to the points we've been making. None of us have said that Saquon Barkley was a bad football player and that's why he shouldn't be drafted. And even today, when the Giants have not used him in a way to make their team better, he's not a bad football player, but he shouldn't have been drafted. And I think that the three of us are better Giants fans for Saquon Barkley than any of the idiots who are buying his jersey and telling people he's more than a running back, because they're setting the expectation for him to, no, you can't just get 4 yards. You need to, you know, take those opportunities to show the world what Saquon can be, how special Saquon Barkley is, Black Panther, Marvel superhero, Captain Saquon. And, but it's, I say this with sincerity, so much of this offseason nonsense, can we get Saquon back for week one? First of all, that doesn't affect whether or not we win or lose the game. Vegas doesn't care if Saquon's back. Nobody cares if Saquon's back outside of people, you know, selling jerseys or middle schoolers, you know, who want to look at highlights. That's, you know, we understand football well enough to understand that part. But by creating this artificial pressure for him to be in you know, week one form, it's just set up a no-win situation for him. And if Saquon Barkley's ever going to have a successful career, as we all know, he needs to get the hell out of here. He needs to go somewhere yes. where he can be Saquon Barkley, be that awesome athlete, and not this number two overall pick that everybody and their brother knows is a wrong decision, and somehow people are looking for enough evidence to be like, okay, well, maybe not.
He needs to get away from this cancer of an organization.
Because and we knew this was going to be the case when, yeah. from day one.
Yep. I mean, I didn't know it was going to be this bad. But it's not even just the injuries, Will. I mean, you talk about – when you pull up the numbers and you look at the stats, I mean, it's just too much boom or bust. And even in his rookie season, it was a lot of it was boom or bust. Now, the problem is in his rookie season, there was a lot of boom. There was a lot of long runs, right? So he got the numbers. Now, because of the injuries, because – for some reason, well, we know the reason why, but the offensive line has somehow managed to get worse than what it was when Dave Gettleman got here. There's not that boom. It's just a lot of bust. It's a lot of 0 yards. It's a lot of 1 yard. I mean, he had 13 rushes for 40 yards. 32, I think, came on one play. What else do you want me to say? You give the guy a ball
the other 13 piece of this, times. There's another piece of this, by the way. 2018, that 32-yard carry is a touchdown. And yes. I don't think a lot of people were talking about that. I was more impressed with Saquon Barkley with those second-half carries that actually moved the pile where he looked like a running back Then that 32-yard play where he finally, you know, after taking all those risks to try to create the big play, finally got something and didn't even get the home run. The Giants punted on that play four plays later.
What do you do with Saquon Barkley? After first... what do you do? I think the rest of the season you got to have really a running back by committee. I think that's the only way to go. I think him and Devontae Booker has to split carries. I really do. Because I've seen this too much where, like, you give him the ball 13 times and 12 of those plays are either a negative play or no gain. Like, that impacts an offense, especially an offense that can't move the ball consistently. If you're constantly in second and long, third and long, like, you can't afford to just keep – like, you can't do, I got to get Saquon 15, 20 touches. No, I don't think you can do that anymore. I think you have to just split the carries and then, you know, hope that, you know, he can be a boom instead of a bust. That's what I think.
They have a boom or bust running back in an offense that tries to emphasize ball control. It's like
and field position.
Did you see the stat that Saquon Barkley has the 39th most carries in the NFL since 2019 started, and he has the second most carries for zero or negative yards?
I've seen similar stats like that. Yes, what did you expect? Like, I'm not asking you, but I'm asking people that were celebrating in that bar that you guys were at in April when you guys melted to the ground. I melted.
No, I think, you know, I totally get it. You know, you think, okay, we can't run the ball. This is the guy who can create something out of nothing. That's going to be enough. But there are, you know, Dave Gettleman was wrong. It's not one running back that elevates the offensive line, the defense, the concession stands, and everything, you know, and everything in between.
Jersey sales.
Football is a team sport. And as you're trying to push Odell out for being bigger than the team, you're bringing in this guy because if he's bigger than the team, he says exactly what the team wants him to say in interviews. And the idea that Saquon Barkley is the guy taking the interview with Kim Jones at the end of the game in a game where he does nothing to help the team.
My dad was furious about that. I think, Will, you saw the tweet. Let me see if I can find my dad's tweet. It was incredible. Like,
by the way, while you guys find that tweet, the Giants actually have a young emerging star on their defense that just had a hell of a game that they should be putting the microphones on, and Xavier McKinney. Like, McKinney had a hell of a game. He's had a hell of a season. And they're interviewing Saquon Barkley.
Exactly. So so Kim Jones posted the interview video, and my dad immediately responds, "Did you ask for an interview with him, or was he offered by the team? Because why him of all players after today's performance?" I'm thinking McKinney, Leonard Williams, Bradberry, who shut down Smith, Dan Jones, the kid, 41, who got the touchdown. Why 26? Why does this team shove this player down our throats as the face of the franchise when he had no effect on the game today? Go, Dad. So there it is. I think that sums it up pretty well.
I think it's as simple as this. As long as Saquon Barkley says in an interview what ownership wants him to say, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. It's impossible for this draft pick on the field to be worse than it's actually been. And guess what? In the long run for the Giants, that's better than if he's been mediocre and they basically still could have given themselves a reasonable situation of like, wow, in 2018, you know, if he regains that form, you know, this could be really something special. Even in 2018, our rushing offense stunk. We had the second to last most first downs in 2018. That's how you measure how good a team is at running the ball, not how many, not yards per carries by saying, okay, we have 170-yard gain and negative three-yard gain. So, wow, we can run 15 yards every time we touch the ball.
Yep.
The way I like to look at how successful a team's running the ball is I look at their team's running stats and I take away the longest play and then I judge it off that. So Saquon had, 13 for 42 yards, I think it was, right? Take away the 30-yard run. He had, 13 carries for 8 yards, 10 yards?
Yeah, Weiss, I love that that metric because I remember there were some analytics folks who were using that in 2018 and they were saying this is – I don't remember how they named the stat, but they were saying, okay, you take X is the number of your top X carries. By removing those X carries, you become a league average running back with your yards per carry. So if, like, you know, if you say, okay, you take away the 199-yard carry, all of a sudden you're 3.4 with the rest of the league, your X is 1. And, like, the best running backs, you know, their X is – Saquon was not one of the top because he had, like we all have been saying, he had those few booms, the 6 plays over 50 yards, and besides that, he was a league average running back. And, you know, yeah, he got those 13 catches for 90 yards in Dallas, which is the same kind of negative EPA net, you know, net difference. But this is not somebody you just give the ball to and he makes and he elevates everybody. And there isn't a running back in the NFL who does that. And there isn't a running back in the NFL who was gifted a title of a face of a franchise in the same way. It's just it's everything about the way this guy is used mocks the intelligence of Giants fans. And I think people have woken up to that. I mean, even Ethan and I were wearing Fire Gettleman shirts a couple of weeks ago. We had guys in Saquon jerseys coming up to us.
Where do I get one of those shirts?
Yeah, couldn't agree more.
Where do I get one of those shirts?
We can connect you to the right people. I had a guy in the parking lot who was selling hats this past week who was like, okay, hold on a second. I need to take a picture of that because I'm selling these next week. He doesn't take Venmo. He only takes Cash App.
Can we talk about the defense?
We should talk a little more about McKinney, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're 45 minutes in, and I still want to touch on the defense and the quarterback before we come up on an hour.
I love Xavier McKinney. Week, but I'm all in on Xavier McKinney.
How could you not?
The last safety that I was this in love with outside of that 1 year with Landon Collins was Kenny Phillips. And he reminds me so much of Kenny Phillips. I don't know if he can hit as hard as Kenny Phillips can. Remember, Kenny Phillips could really lower the stick, but I love Xavier McKinney. I loved it when they drafted him. This is his rookie year because last year he missed, you know, all the season, majority of the season with that broken foot. But I love Xavier McKinney. Patrick Graham, the fact that he continues to put together these types of game plans, despite the fact that he's so depleted with the pass rush, I mean, it's amazing. I think he's a future head coach in this NFL. In the NFL, I think he should get a job. But I love Xavier McKinney, man. I think he was my breakout player coming into the season, and he's great, man. What was it, 5-6 picks, right, interceptions this year? You got to love it. Center fielder, he can cover. I love it.
He's great. I mean.
Yeah, well, I think.
You're going to say something?
No, I think, you know, I think McKinney is, you know, there's not a lot that's right with the Giants. But McKinney is really representative of everything that's right with the Giants. And yes. I think it's underreported, but if you go back to the 2020 draft, the Giants said that they had a trade worked out to move down in the second round, but they had McKinney targeted as the one guy that they said, okay, if he's available, we're taking him instead. And to me, that was like, you know, finally being able to breathe after being underwater for years. That's like, okay, coherent process, literally the opposite of, you know, go away, I don't have time to screw around, which we'd seen 2 years and 1 day of drafting beforehand. And obviously, you know, I think that juxtaposition is even more clear where McKinney's not the guy who gets the post-game interview. It's Barkley. But what this guy's done, and I think even from last year before the injury, and then you have the injury and the way that, you know, you have two very high profile guys with Logan Ryan and Jabril Peppers, and they still say, okay, we're giving McKinney every down snaps going into the 2021 season. This is the first guy I've seen on the defense who I've said, okay, wow, 10 years from now, I might be able to look back as fondly on this guy as I do on Landon Collins, because there hasn't been another guy who's fit that since. I mean, Dalvin Tomlinson was special in his own way, but he didn't have that swagger that Landon Collins has that, you know, that can really inspire the crowd. And McKinney is that dude. And, you know, I'm not literate enough in film, and I haven't, you know, gone back and rewatched some of the games enough to understand how well McKinney has played, but I'm seeing him lining up all over the field, him playing versatile roles, kind of like people were hoping was a best case scenario with Isaiah Simmons. I think it's pretty clear, and even from the way that Julian Love's kind of filled in, and I'm a lot more bearish on Julian Love than a lot of other Giants fans.
Are there people that are bullish on Julian Love, like really bullish, or like, okay, he's fine?
I think it's probably the same people who are trusting the resume, but you know, but I think that's totally a fair counterpoint. But I see no place for Jabril Peppers going forward, especially with Aaron Robinson removing him a slot. And I think
Aaron Robinson played a great game. There was one play that I was especially impressed with. I want to say Hurts threw a deep ball to the left side of the end zone, and Robinson, like any like late round rookie pick, could have just like run into the wide receiver or like gotten flagged for holding or pass interference, and he turned his head around at the perfect time, and I was like came away immediately impressed.
They showed that on the replay. By the way, I mentioned this on Twitter during the game, but the guy on the loudspeaker, he kept messing things up. Like Tate Crowder made an interception. He's like, Darnay Holmes with a great interception. And then everybody's like, weird, that's not Darnay Holmes. And then he did it again. And then there was another case. I tweeted it, but I don't remember who it was. But they like kept making these like basic mistakes about who players are. And I think it's just like, it's like when the Giants drafted Dexter Williams and they tweeted, I think it was a picture of Cleveland Farrell. Like this is not like a, you know, I don't understand. It's not the social media coordinator who's reflective of how bad the failure is, but they're just embarrassing failures that you see on every level of this organization right now.
2020 and 2021 drafts, I think, are they're producing some good players.
So I think, you know, the point I got to bring up is, you know, I'm certainly one of the least bearish people on Joe Judge. We've seen that improvement since he came into the draft room. You know, we've seen flirting with trading down for the first time when he came in.
There was a philosophical change that came with Joe Judge that I liked. There's a lot of stuff in terms of in-game coaching and some of his philosophies that I don't agree with. But that's why I'm not like, if they go and they hire a GM outside the organization, that's why I can be on board even if they keep Joe Judge, because I like some of the philosophical changes that have come. I don't like other things, but...
But that's the thing, and I will, like, you guys are both more pro-Judge than I am. Like, it's being the tallest midget in the room.
But
like,
is it, though?
Yes, it is, because if you come in here and the only positive thing that we can say about you is that there was a philosophical change in the draft where all of a sudden you're doing the common sense thing, the thing that everyone knows, any intelligent football person knows is the right thing in trading back in that spot. And like that's what we're going to hang the hat on, even though we disagree with 95% of the in-game decisions.
That's not enough for me,
because you can get a guy that does both. You can get a guy that does both. We're the New York fucking Giants. Why are we settling for a guy who just comes in here and is like, oh, we're going to trade back, when he's fucking punting on the opponent's 43 when he's 2-8?
Because he's punting on the opponent's 43 with Matt Skura, Billy Price.
But don't make excuses for that.
Oh, we'll stop it. We'll stop that.
We're not going to make excuses for Joe Judge in-game coaching decisions. But I'm going to disagree with Ethan. It isn't just the common sense thing of trading down. They are getting tremendous value from their 2020 class. Tate Crowder, not a great player, but he's a capable player. They got him with the last pick in the 7th round. You know,
Cam Brown,
great special teams player. Like, they're finding value late in the draft, right? Like, that's important in roster buildings. Now, if you can extend that to 3-4 years where you're getting good value on top of the fact that you're maneuvering in the draft and you're doing things that a logical person would do or a good GM would do, like, that's something that's not just like, you can't just chalk that up as, well, he's just trading down. No, they have drafted well. Something changed.
Yeah, your guys' standards are so low.
It's not. Well, here's the thing.
So low.
Here's the thing. Well, 2020 draft. No, they are low, but the improvements are not marginal improvements. They are huge improvements. Now, we don't know
that's
details.
That's fine, but they don't But they haven't translated to any semblance of in-game success.
Years. It's been two drafts.
But it doesn't matter because it's not just the results. It's the process. They're not even doing the right things on the field.
So we knew when – all of us knew in 2019 when they were, you know, throwing Shermer out to save Gettleman's skin. We knew they were more than 1 year away. And if you followed me on Twitter, I kept going into, okay, How are we going to evaluate Judge in year one and Gettleman in 2020 when it's not a 1 year thing?
Right.
And, you know, we know that the mistakes that he's made over the last 2 years that he somehow has a pass for that Ralph decided that everybody should forgive everybody for because, you know, John Mara said, oh, wow, you know, all these awful moves that we didn't realize were bad. They're actually kind of bad moves. But, you know, the moves this year weren't quite as bad. You know, we knew that he inherited a shit sandwich. And I disagree with the fact that the only thing he's done right is create some sort of competence in the draft room. Joe Judge, I think, says the right things to get his players to believe in him and trust him. And I don't think you can take that for granted, especially when you have so much bullshit overshadowing this. As we all agree, you have a GM whose very presence makes it harder for the players to play and makes it harder for the coaches to coach. And Joe Judge is making the best that he can that he can with that. And I think that counts for something. And, you know, I've heard the argument.
How do you believe that, though? You're going to simultaneously tell everyone that because Joe Judge comes in here and he says the right things, but you're also going to say that the GM's presence, the same GM that's handing out these bad contracts and the same GM that's drafting these players, that his presence is somehow negatively impacting these players? How does that add up?
Well, I think that there is a complacency within the organization that, you know, that grandfathers certain roster spots and certain roles on the team.
You know who Kenny Golladay is standing on the sidelines pissed at? Joe Judge and Jason Garrett. You know who he's not
Jason
pissed
Garrett.
At? Dave Gettleman, who gave him that fucking nice contract.
No. You can't do that. The issue with Kenny Golladay has always been.
But I'm not doing that.
It's always been with Jason Garrett. We all know that the reason why Jason Garrett was fired was because he was not getting the ball to his playmakers. That was one of the main reasons.
Correct, but Will's saying that Gettleman's presence is like some negative cloud over the team. You think Kenny Golladay is standing there saying, fuck, I hate Dave Gettleman?
It has been in this sense.
No, it has been for the fans.
Yes, but it has been for Joe Judge in this.
It has been for the coaching.
We've moved the metric on Joe Judge. After last year, like when Joe Judge was hired, the talk was, you got to let him build the program. After 1 year, the record wasn't great, but there was a lot of positive things that we could build on. Now in year two, all of a sudden we're saying, well, forget all that. And I've been doing this as well to a certain extent because.
But I'm not saying forget all that. I'm saying where's the progression?
In terms
there hasn't
of,
been
in
any
terms
progression.
Of what? In terms of
well, from the
in terms of on-field success.
From the beginning of 2020 to I think the team we have now, I think there's a lot of progression.
No, but Weiss's point was, all right, he comes in here. Let's see if these processes that he says he's going to come and implement, like, let's see if he actually does them. And we agree that when he came in here and he did them and it was reflected in the draft, you guys just pointed out some nice depth pieces that he got. Okay, that's great. He left a lot to be desired in terms of his on-field decision-making, his coaching, and his offensive strategy. And we have not seen that improve at all this year. You could even make the argument that it has gotten worse.
How much is that, do you think, personnel versus his overall philosophy?
But we just agreed that he has a large say in personnel.
Right.
So then he's got to be partially responsible.
But when you talk about personnel, you have to look at the fact that he's only been here for 18 months.
Correct. But again, we've gone through the four stages of the team.
Right.
It's not like he's on the field going and doing the correct thing with the wrong result. How many times have we sat here and recorded and been like, why is he using his fucking timeouts? Why is he punting in this situation? What does he have to lose? Why
yes,
is he not getting the ball to these players?
Bad.
Correct. And that's my point. That's my point. If you can, we agree that there have been some processes, mostly in the draft, that have been greatly improved since Joe Judge has arrived. My point is that's well and good, but where is the progression in terms of the on-field decision-making and the offensive philosophy? Because it's an offensive league, and right. We have this team putting up 10 points, putting up 13 points. And
okay.
I have not seen enough to be like, okay, his adjustments in terms of the personnel are enough where it would significantly outweigh what I'm seeing on the field. That's my point.
So I don't I'm thinking of a couple answers, and I like don't even like giving these answers because, like you guys, I'm much more concerned with process over results. And if I say something like Jones is better at taking care of the ball, you know, I don't want to necessarily say that that's a Joe Judge, you know, who deserves credit for Jones taking care of the ball, but that's a tangible improvement that we've absolutely seen over the last year and a half, and that we have more faith in Daniel Jones in certain situations than we were able to say a year ago.
Handicapped the quarterback. I don't like using that excuse because
yeah.
while they've cut the turnovers down, they've basically taken a part right. of his, no, game,
we,
his and aggression.
I've heard you guys say that, and I'm not contesting your point that, you know, by saying, okay, you've got to take care of the ball, they're also creating a system and an offense where his touchdown stats are going to be embarrassingly low. So, you know, that's absolutely a fair point. But I was never as much of a Tom Coughlin fan as a lot of other people are. And I think that some of the Giants' success, I think, came in spite of Coughlin. I think the Super Bowls are outliers more than they are necessarily a reflection of who he was as a coach. But what would you say 3 years into Tom Coughlin's career were like any sort of game management advantages or any sort of strategic advantages that he created on the field? Even well after the fact, I can't really point to very many. So, you know, and again, like I'm not necessarily saying Coughlin was a perfect coach, but you're not always going to get the guy like Sean McVay who's going to say like, oh, wow, like, you know, great call. And I guess, you know, you obviously have that one fake punt attempt against that in Dallas that didn't work. And we haven't seen anything like that since, but I trust this guy. I feel like is he looking at the long term? And he is. And I think very simply, there are a lot bigger problems that need to be fixed than Joe Judge. And I think we can probably all agree there.
When you talk about offensive philosophy, understand that Joe Judge's top target for his offensive coordinator was Brian Daboll.
Yeah,
that was his top.
And I think Buffalo has one of the most impressive offensive systems right now in the league.
Right. So while I'm not trying to absolve him from the Jason Garrett blame, I do think there are certain things he aligns himself with Jason Garrett's philosophy. My only thing is I can be sold on a third year of Joe Judge. Because I was literally asking for what they might do last year, bringing in a GM that aligns with Joe Judge's philosophy. I was literally saying that a year ago. So I can be put on board with that. Now, I don't think you should shortchange yourself and make that a requirement. I do think you can find philosophical alliances from somebody that's never worked with the Patriots align with Joe Judge. I think you can do that. But I don't think it's the worst thing in the world if they keep Joe Judge. I don't. And I can be sold on a third year of Joe Judge. You know what I can't be sold on? I can't be sold on Joe Judge and Kevin Abrams. I can't be sold on, you know, Joe Judge and Chris Pettit. I can't, right? Because there's still that giant way in there. What I can be sold on is, hey, we got Joe Judge. We're not necessarily doubling down on him. But we want to bring in somebody that aligns philosophically with him because some of his philosophies or his overall philosophy of roster building, we can agree with. That's why I can be on board.
Okay. Well, you know what?
Because the GM's not deciding if we're going for a fourth down or not. You know what I'm saying?
No. But he can hire a guy who he knows is likely going to go for it on fourth down. And You talk about the giant way being them firing Gettleman and promoting Pettit. It would also be the giant way for them to go retiring. Out there and bring in a guy. Retiring Dave Gettleman, sure. It would also be the giant way for them to go out there and bring in a GM that explicitly will only get hired if they work with Judge. Because we've spoken about a million times that the only – like the biggest problem is that we spoke about literally earlier in this podcast that there's no collaboration, that everyone's on a different timeline. Everyone on the same timeline for once, and I'll say, and I don't want to keep going on about this because we're already over an hour, and I still want to talk about the quarterback for a few minutes. Will, I can let you close out. Let me say this, Will. Okay, Mike Borgonzi, who I didn't realize had a Joe Judge connection. If he comes in, I would be thrilled because, one, he knows how to build a roster, and two, he's been around offenses that are too good that if he watches Joe Judge for a year and sees the same bullshit going on, he'll fire his ass and bring in someone who knows what he's doing. That's the only Joe Judge connection that I would be happy with.
What about Monty Olsenfort? I mean, you talk about Kansas City. Kansas City hasn't drafted well.
I would disagree with that, and they also know how to build a roster.
I'm just saying, they haven't drafted well recently.
So I will very simply, I will pass on the question of who's going to who should be the GM, because I don't pretend to know enough to be able to say, okay, this is what this person has done in this role, this is what they wanted to do, and this is how I feel like we just really don't know. And I think without connections, which you might have better than I do, I can't really add any insight there. But when I want to talk about, for example, again, why I found this win so hollow on Sunday. And I think right now, you know, I've made this case before. I've really made this case since 2018. It's easy to be a fan and say, okay, I just want to beat the other person. And okay, when the game's over, I'm not thinking about this until the next game. That's an easy, healthy way to root for a football team. That is not the way that any of us root for a football team. And it's impossible to buy into investing again, you know, in wanting to see us beat our opponent when we have so much more, when the most important thing for the Giants is simply John Mara having to decide that enough is enough. And we've made this point over and over again. He wants it to be Kevin Abrams or Chris Pettit. He wants those lifers to continue around. And I hate not being able to fully invest and root for the team, but he wants to react. Everything that goes right, if Jalen Reagor makes that catch, it's okay, wow, maybe, you know, enough's enough. If Jalen Reagor doesn't make that catch, and it's what fans have to, you know, understand is, you know, it's, I don't think he's a bad person and a bad owner. You know, it's not like he, you know, when we're talking about the Giants way, and well, okay, you're fair, fine, he's not doing a good job as an owner, I agree with that, but I don't think he's, you know, I think if he wakes up and hears the right message, if he's Simba and he goes and hears Mufasa in the clouds, Mr. Mara, Saquon Barkley is a cancer on the franchise, like he can do the right things. But we need that wake up call. False hope. And you know, I think cynically, we waited for 10 games to get the 7 easy games on the schedule. Weiss and I are shaking our heads
as Will goes on this rant for the listeners.
He's trying to make John Merrill to be Gandhi right now with all this.
No, at least Simba, if nobody else.
The guy's been a terrible owner for the past 10 years.
10 games against tough opponents.
Will's hoping that John Mara goes to Joshua Tree and does peyote and has a revelation.
He's interfered multiple times. He loves continuity. He loves comfort. He's fine with losing as long as he doesn't get embarrassed. The only reason he's now so – we're hearing so much about this is because he's being embarrassed. He's the one getting booed. Listen, the losing didn't start this year. It's been going on for 3 years. Dave Gettleman embarrassed this franchise multiple times. When he stood in front of the microphone, John Mara just stood around, did nothing. You talk about Saquon Barkley, the way he handled the Eli Manning situation. The guy's been a disaster. Okay, the only reason that
covered up Josh Brown.
Yeah, the only reason we're even like he's not in that category, or it took so long to put him in that James Dolan category, is because the fact that the Giants won 2 Super Bowls under his watch in 4 years. Other than that, the guy's been a total embarrassment, Will. I understand he's probably a nice guy. He wants to win. I get it. Fine. But you know what? They're not winning. Okay?
And a lot of it's everything you said. Everything you said is on point.
Yeah, Will doesn't disagree.
No, everything you said is on point until you talk about the James Dolan category. Because the difference between John Mara and James Dolan is John Mara's players – well, really, it was Wellington Mara's players for the most part. But even John Mara's players look back at John Mara fondly. And they want to make him look good. James Dolan doesn't have that luxury with his players, and I think James Dolan's players feel like James Dolan would throw me in front of the bus to make himself look good. I don't say that about John Mara. I think fundamentally John Mara wants to do the right thing. He's just not patient enough. Well, he doesn't understand.
This is the long-winded way. Yeah, we get it. Listen, James Dolan is a fucking asshole.
Yes.
John Mara is a nice guy who's an idiot. That's it. That's the most succinct way to put it. I can't say it any better than that. There we go. We're well over an hour. Let's rapid fire real quick. Daniel Jones. The rumors are now he's going to be missing some time. So bad, quite
very bad.
And
I don't understand. I think it's a good thing or not a bad thing.
No. Well, okay. You know what? How about this? Since we're an hour 10, if you're listening to this on Wednesday morning, I believe the plan is to have a Twitter Spaces on tonight, Wednesday evening. Is that correct, William and Weiss?
Yes.
So
that rumor has been suggested, and if everybody else is free, you know, hey, if you guys want to speak, if you're listening to this.
Yes. So Wednesday, I think there's going to be a lot of Daniel Jones talk on the Spaces. So that's smart right there. That's a teaser. That's what we call that in the biz. So we'll go ahead and we'll tease that because we're fairly over time, but all right, final thoughts before we conclude. Will, let you go first.
Where are you on the Dan wagon?
I'm well off the Dan wagon.
Yeah, I'm with Ethan. I'm not off. I just look, man. It's not all his fault. I keep saying this, man. It's tough to get an evaluation on him, but you gotta show me something.
I'll say this. It's. I'm not going to pretend that I have the solution. You know, there are, you know, a couple quarterbacks you might be able to sell me on in the draft. You could sell me on another year of him as a transition quarterback. You could sell me on bringing in a veteran. Like, the only thing that I think I know is that he is not the long-term answer.
Yeah, I think where I'm at is I don't think there's anybody. I think that there's nothing that sums up Daniel Jones better than this. I don't think there's anybody who can say anything to ding his toughness. And I think when the first thing you talk about is a guy's toughness, there's a real problem with the quarterback position. And, you know, I'll own the fact that the last time I was on this podcast, you were asking me about the Dan wagon, and I said 9.5. I think
The denominator, sorry.
Yeah, thank you. I think I was a little excited about the Saints game and let that kind of get to my head. And that was probably a little higher than I was, but I also think that I do maintain that Jones, I feel right now better about his long-term future than I did about Eli Manning's long-term future year three, halfway through. So I think part of my stubborn kind of sticking around and giving Jones a chance is frankly from being too easily satisfied with Eli, who was most of his career an average to below average starting quarterback, with, you know, certainly an exception at his prime. But I'm more bearish on Jones than I've been really since before I saw him in preseason. And I'm sad to say it, but what bothers me is I think, you know, we've got this Duke guy, but what I want to see from him is mental. And that's where he's coming up short. He doesn't identify where he's going to be able to capitalize and get an easy read at the beginning of plays. He's not somebody who scares defense when he holds onto the ball 4 seconds into a play. Not that ever happens. He's not that guy that defenses are holding their breaths for. And I think that's that we kind of know that at this point. And I think I was wrong. I think I gave him, I think I was too high.
He's a victim and a symptom of this cancer organization.
That was deep.
Well,
he's
he's
a victim because this team has done a horrible job building around him and not giving him what they should have given him, and he's going against the timeline of a rookie contract. And he's a symptom because the reason he was drafted was because he reminded the organization of Eli Manning.
That's great points. Great points.
And not just that, but I think, I talk until I'm blue in the face, and I've been doing that for years about the Giants failing to navigate, you know, the fine line between complacency and composure. And with both of their first round picks, their first picks under Shurmur, Barkley and Jones, the Giants pointed to how these guys, what these guys said in press conferences. You know, Barkley's always got the answer that, you know, you'd click in the Madden to whatever, boost your team chemistry. Jones, Gettleman pointed to this after he was drafted. He said, you know, I watched a game where Jones put a ball right on the guy's hands. The guy dropped it, and Jones said, I got to throw a better ball. But, you know, that's great. But at the same time, that doesn't put a light of fire under guys the way that Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady does. And I think that's you know, the complacency that permeates through this organization right now at the wrong places.
Yep.
Yeah. All right. Let's wrap it up. Follow us on Twitter. Follow me, Ethan GSN. Follow Weiss NYG Daily. Follow the blog at Gotham SN. Follow Will at 20 number 7. Subscribe. We're everywhere. iTunes, Audioboom, Google Play, Stitcher Radio. There was no bourbon in me tonight, but maybe for next episode. And for those that are listening, hopefully on Wednesday morning, afternoon, if we can get this up in time, hope to see you in the Twitter spaces. Talk to you next week.
Peace.